VWA, mobile.
Steve and 0TR are sitting here at home. I'm watching them building off the grid.
And where do they build off the grid at? Is that in Alaska?
This one we watched was, and this one's in Tennessee, between Knoxville and something else. But it's way out in the boonies.
Half of the construction cost of building the thing is getting the material to the site.
That up there in Alaska is what's expensive. Wow. I think it was $250,000 what they figured. This one's $125,000, and it looks like a Quonset hut, only there'll be a sod net on the roof, so it's sort of like an underground.
Well, you know what? It's going to be kind of an underground kind of thing. A lot of people are just buying these old shipping containers and having them flown in. You weld two or three of them together, maybe put another one on top, and then just digging a big hole and burying them and leaving one in exposed where you can have a window or two and some view, and there you go. Put an interior in them and you're off to the races.
And 4DJC.
This is N0TR. Hi, Jerry. Yeah, I don't know. I know Bernice don't like to be trapped, so one way out just wouldn't cut it. There'd have to be another fire exit or something. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, hope you guys are doing well today. Yeah, I used to do a lot of work with the shipping containers that they're not watertight. For one thing, you have to seal them up, which is a whole different thing. And they, I mean, they're pretty strong, but they are, you know, see, those things are pretty heavy. I mean, we lifted them off trucks and rail cars and that sort of thing, you know, over the years, but they're not the lightest things in the world. They are pretty sturdy, though.
Seen done is where they just dig a deep hole in the ground and folks just simply pour waterproof, about 4 to 6 inches of waterproof concrete around them, and that waterproofs them, and then they leave the front side, you know, exposed, and you know, they cut and weld windows into the front of them, and a doorway, and it just, you can do just about anything you want with the inside of them. So, and then they just pretty much bury that, and they pretty much a structural bomb shelter on top of being something that you can put in the ground to have up in the mountains somewhere. It's kind of interesting.
That would be a good getaway. Well, I'll tell you, we got our view out the back here, and I got me a new sign here, and one of them on the outside there says Area 51, and the other one down here is one of them old fallout shelter signs as you go down the stairway now, and this is our bomb shelter. It's kind of like they used to tell us when we was flying, if they drop a nuclear bomb, you just stick your head between your legs and kiss your patootie goodbye. So I'm not particularly worried about that. Go ahead, Jerry.
Remember that craze back in the 50s where everybody was building one? I know my wife's father came up from work one day back in the late 50s, early 60s, found his brother-in-law had dug a hole in his backyard for a bomb shelter. That's been the early 60s, I guess, a bomb shelter, but they didn't have anything to put in it. So all it was a muddy hole about 10 feet deep. I have no idea how long it took for them to fill that thing back up. And, anyway, you were talking about those bomb shelters. I thought about that. I said that was a craze. Of course, back years ago, my grandparents they always had something to go to if they had a tornado coming through. But it was just a hole in the ground, basically with a couple of maybe one door on the outside of it at an angle.
Remember the little animated turtle? Duck and cover. Oh, and y'all remember the nuclear clock? Yeah, how close we were to blowing ourselves up. Yeah, that's the only reason I don't do anything like that. I just don't know if I want to hang around if in case something did happen like that. You know, what was left, what would be left out there would not be worth having.
You got that right, Steve. I think that's true. Well, I used to ride my motorcycle back and forth when I first got out of high school out there from Pittsburgh, Kansas, out to Wichita, and I was working at Learjet, and there was ICBM missiles out there all across the Flint Hills, and there was quite a few of those people took and built their houses in, or bomb shelter in, and it really made quite the bomb shelter, I'll tell you. Going across there, I always thought it'd be wonderful to live out there. But, you know, you'd look out there and you'd see those old rock farmhouses, and they'd either burn down or were just gone. And I always thought, wouldn't that be fascinating if the walls in those places could just talk? Go ahead, Jerry. This is NZOTR.
He retired from the Air Force, I don't know, not too long ago, but some years back, and he worked in those silos. He's from Oklahoma, and I'm not sure if they're out in that area or not, but he was like I'm not sure of the rank, but I think he was a master chief or something like that, and he was showing some pictures he'd taken online of some of the silos, the stuff he could show. He said, you know, he said, you have to realize once you're in there, and you're not coming out. So if there's an attack, he said, the first place they're going to attack is where they're coming from. So I think the threat these days is something different than that. I think they don't have to worry about destroying the buildings. They're going to worry about, you know, getting us out of the way, whoever the enemy may be. But I was thinking about that when you talk about seeing those silos out there. I know he said you don't. He said, I mean, there were just literally hundreds of them out there. I suppose maybe more than that. Who knows? Go ahead, Steve.
On TV, where they've taken those things and turned them into homes, and, you know, if you maintain them right, they're right nice. Man, I tell you what. Takes a lot of money, but you can sure do it. So, anyhow, in the meantime, I'm just as happy as a lark sitting on my little spot of ground out there south of Highway 11.
Nice to be, you see. And we love it where we're at. I wish they weren't building all those houses over the hill, but I can't see them, so it don't bother us. Just bothers me that there's traffic on Highway 101 there now, and 14. It wasn't there before, and they haven't done anything to improve the roads for the most part. But it looks like they could take some of the taxes from those 400 homes and do something about putting in a stoplight and stuff like that. Well, back home, we had a place that was out in the country, and they actually built a home in a grain silo. And several different floors in it, and it was quite a thing. I don't know, did they own that, what was her name, Foxes? I don't know if they owned that or not. I think they owned the ground it was on, a friend of ours, and they rented that out, and somebody had actually built a home in a grain silo. Yeah, I don't know how many floors they had in it, but quite a few. Go ahead, Jerry.
That'd be any different than living in a lighthouse, except you got more room. I know some of those grain silos I've seen, the pictures, at least photos of in the Midwest, some of those things are huge. I mean, they're tremendous in size. But there's, I guess, wherever you can, if you can afford to renovate it, you can live there. be as good as any place, would I would imagine. I don't know. I'd have to have an elevator. I don't think I could walk up all those stairs.
I don't know. I think I'd probably have to have mine on a single level. I had a house that was three stories, the last house I had. I made myself a promise that when I built the house that I'm in, that more than three steps to get into the house, I was going to sue the builder. And all mine is all on one level. I am done with stairs.
Any of that is my brother-in-law, who I was really, really close with, was a lieutenant on the Wichita Police Force and a security guard on Air Force One when they were building it. And when they retired, we wanted them to move down by us. And sure enough, they moved over to Lake of the Ozarks. And it was exactly that way. I mean, if you went down to the lake, you had to walk, I don't know how many steps going down, probably 75 to 100 steps. And I told George, I said, one of these days, and the house was that way too, and you had to go upstairs and this and that. I said, one of these days, when you get a little bit older, in about 10 years, you're going to throw this house in the ditch and move out by us where it's flat. And sure enough, they bought a home about 10 years later that was 20 miles west of us, out in the flatlands of Kansas. And it was in the boondocks, but it was a ranch-style house. And there was only, I think four or five stairs to go down to the, it was split level. And George didn't particularly like that, but the older you get, the less you like the steps. Go ahead, Jerry.
Thinking about that, we've got two bedrooms upstairs, and when our kids were young, younger, when they were still in school, we had, that way they could have their privacy, and we wouldn't have to do much other than going upstairs and do a little cleaning every once in a while. And now with the kids gone, I use one of the upstairs bedrooms for where our grandkids are. They stay when they come here, which hadn't been recently, but they stay in this room. The other one, my son, kind of keeps his room for himself when he decides to come home. But everything else is downstairs, which I like. But one of these days, I'm going to have to move the radio downstairs, so I don't have to walk up down these stairs. And we never thought that we'd stay here 25 or 25 years and thought we'd build another house, maybe on one level. But we never, we never got around to it. But you just never know. But I just don't like the idea of moving again at this point in time.
I'm just about to destinate up here at Big Lots, and then we're going to run around a couple other places to pick up some stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off with you. Y'all try to stay warm. Oh, hey, Tom, my living room has been averaging about 76 degrees. Sue likes it that nice and warm with that wood stove, and she appreciates the wood. So y'all take it easy. K&4, VWA, I'm clear. Y'all carry on.
Good to hear you, and that's great for your wife. We used to keep it always that warm back in Kansas. I built three different wood stoves, and you're sure welcome to come get the rest of that wood anytime you want. That's good wood, and it's still covered up, and even easier to get down to now, I'd say. But nothing like wood heat. At night here, most people like it cool. We don't. So I put the thermostat on 73. The basement's always 70. And we got 12 steps, Jerry, and that's all we got. And, that's my Radio Shack and Bernice's sewing room. Now, I don't mind that. It's good exercise. But I sure wouldn't want any more than that. And if it gets to be a problem, I'll put in an elevator. But you guys take care out there. That virus is still pretty bad. And I have to tell you, Steve, I put in for Bernice and I a shot now at Prisma Health, and I used my same email on both of them, and she got an appointment and I didn't. and I didn't notice that you had to have discrete emails for each one, so don't make that mistake. And I did, so I'll have to reschedule whenever they get back in touch with me. I think Bernice is February 10th or something like that. See you later, Steve. KN4VWA and 0TR. Go ahead, Jerry.
Good afternoon. Good talking with you. Stay safe. Yeah, Tom, you know, I was, my daughter was telling me one of her photographer's mother, who's 71, just walked into one of the health clinics, or the health clinic here in Anderson County, and got her vaccine immediately. Didn't have to wait more than about 10 minutes. I think it's just wherever you are and the amount of population, that sort of thing. And some people even going through Ingles. Ingles has got a check-in thing for the vaccine. Of course, I won't be 70 until the end of March. So, you know, maybe I'll be able to get one sometime in April, I hope, unless they open it up to a few more. I'd like to see them start giving some more vaccinations. But Tom, I think our upstairs is probably about 10 or 12 steps. It's not much. It is okay now, and it doesn't bother me. I don't come up, I don't run up, down or anything anyway. I do have a little better lighted now than I did before, and I think that's important. But otherwise, I can still, you know, I don't have any knee problems right now, but don't anticipate any. Hope I don't have any.
Well, from what I read, DHEC is controlling those, and you have to have an appointment. And when I signed up for it, and then they sent it to a place called VAMS or something like that, then I had to go on there and fill that out. And with name, address, and all that stuff, and then what medications you take. And then you send that in, and then you get a confirmation from Prisma Health that you've got an appointment. And then you go over there, and you click on that, and there's dates on there. And you start clicking on them, and it says all these dates are filled. And you click on the next day, and all these dates are filled. And they're filled clear up until the middle of February now. And it's a pain in the rear end.
I think I heard that Ann met over here in Anderson. I think they filled their whole month of January up in about 2 hours when it got online and got working. And my primary care doctor is in Harlem, Georgia. And in Georgia, they started in some counties, and Hart County is one of them. They started vaccinating people over 65, but you have to either live or work there. So I didn't come under any one of those two criteria. But I told my wife, I said, you know, we'd rather get somebody to hire us real quick so we could get a vaccination. But it's filled up over there too. It's just, I think the first onslaught is going to be pretty busy, then maybe it may slack off some a little bit, but it's just going to require some patience, I suppose. But I hope you get yours pretty soon as well. With your situation with your heart and all that, it'd be mighty nice to be able to get in on that first wave.
I had an appointment down there a couple of weeks ago, and this nurse was really nice, and she had an ultrasound of her carotid arteries. And she gave her the web address and all that, but I didn't read it correctly. And it said you needed a discrete email address, and I thought that meant just, you know, some people don't have an email address. So I just used my regular Gmail, and I signed her up, signed myself up for it first, and then immediately signed Bernice up for it. But I used the same Gmail address. Well, you can't do that. And so it was several days, and then they come back and said, if you're a couple, and you signed your spouse up on the same email address, you have to go through the whole thing again. Oh, man. And I'm going to be 73 this month and have congestive heart failure and lung problems. And, I thought they was going to put people in like that first. And they didn't. They just said anybody over the age of 70. Well, there were 687,000 people in South Carolina that's eligible for that, you know? So, guess what?
A lot of retired people moved here like you guys did. A lot of people of that age bracket here, but I would have thought that they put somebody at that age bracket that had a health condition as well at the front of the line. You would think so.
What? They was going to do that, but they didn't, Jerry. And it's just a pain. Well, I asked my VA doctor, and she said, "Oh yeah, you can get a shot," but she actually had to drive to Columbia on New Year's Day while they were off on vacation to get her shot. And I can do that. I can go to Columbia and get it. But you know what? That drive for us is a long drive. That's 125 miles each way. So that's 250, and then you're going to do it again 21 days later. That's 500 miles. And I always figured, you know, not to be paranoid, but the more you're out on that highway, the more risk you're taking. And there's just no way that you can get around that with these idiots the way they drive down here, like down on I-26. It's pretty good until you get within 30 miles of Columbia, and then all the crazies come out. This is N0TR.
CC for ID. Yeah, I know what you mean. I just don't. Columbia was absolutely the last. I haven't been through there in a number of years now, but I know my wife went to. She and her sister and brother drove to Charleston to visit one of their aunt. I believe it was last year. They said going through Columbia is as bad as going through downtown Atlanta now, because it's just a melee almost down there. And I mean, that's it. I never have been particularly fond of going to or through Columbia either.
This is N0TR. Well, you know, I've been driving since I was 14 years old in motorcycles and everything else for years, and only involved in one accident in. A nun ran a stop sign, so we called her the Flying Nun, if you remember that. And she just drove to a stop sign, hit us broadside. And we was running 55 miles an hour, and that, like, scared us both to death and hit Bernice's door on the side of that Avalon. And I'm glad we was in that. An old boy told us at the salvage yard that was one of the stiffest frames in the industry, and he didn't even like to try to bend them, but it was total. And that's a lot of years of driving, and I just, down here, I've never seen people so dang crazy. I mean, they got to be out in front. You can be running 90 miles an hour or 80. No, I never go over 80. If you go 80 miles an hour down I-26, they'll pass you like you're sitting on a rock.
We got a couple of the roundabouts here on the. We live just off Brown Road in Anderson, and we got a couple of roundabouts here, and the one closest to us is a small one. It's not a two-lane one or anything like that. It's pretty small. And it crosses King's Road, and you'd be amazed if people just drive straight through it. I mean, they'll drive over the center thing and everything. They just drive straight across and knock the yield signs down. I mean, there's some crazy people out there. They just, I don't know whether they're drunk when they go through it or just, you know, going too fast or what, but and they don't know what yield means. They think yield means that you're supposed to yield. Yeah, when you're in the circle, you're supposed to yield. They just dart out in front of you without a care in the world. I'm cautious about the time of day I go down there. They had a four-way stop there, and the people got so confused about the four-way stop. It was just crazy. I said, "Man, why in the world did you put a traffic light there?" I said, "That thing had enough. I had more than enough traffic to warrant placing a traffic light there," and they didn't want to do it. But it's, you know, It was just an experiment. It's probably the DOT probably footed most of the bill to do an experimental one there, and they got one up at up the road here where Mr. Cromer's business is. They could build another one on just off around 107 down, like headed towards past Highway 24, like headed towards Highway 29 in Georgia. And this, those things are there. People are so confused about it. It's just crazy.
DOT did anything intelligent, it'd be out of character. I do think they did a fine job down there on I-85 with that new interchange. But as far as around the county here, no. That three-way stop they put down there is the biggest pain in the rear that ever was. And then they 400 houses. Think how many cars that means. And they have wrecks up here on 101 pretty near every day. And we just drive right through there. And you'd slow down, but people went through there fine. Now it backs up any time of the day. It's backed up just about. And it's crazy. But the drivers down here, wow, how many people every day you see that get hit by a DUI or something? There was a friend of ours on here, his son got hit by a DUI driver on a motorcycle. There was a fireman down here, and he wasn't doing anything wrong. And a guy come across the highway and ran head-on into him. And it just happens all the time. You know, up in Kansas, I said I'd never go around the block without a good radar detector. And down here, you don't need it, man. Nobody obeys the laws, and there's no enforcement.
Such a bad reputation in some small towns about speed traps. Yeah, they were around, and they were money makers for them. But tell you what, I mean, I don't. If you're not doing over 75, they're just not going to stop you unless you're driving all over the place. And I know the last time we went to Greenville back at Christmas, I know somebody, a guy went by me. He had been going over 100 miles an hour. And there was a state trooper down there. He didn't have any pulling over. The guy just whizzed on by. He didn't give chase to him. I don't know what's going on with it. I mean, I can understand, you know, 4 or 5 miles an hour above the speed limit. When you're driving 25, 30 miles above the speed limit and that kind of traffic, somebody has to do is just pull out at the wrong time. There's gonna be multiple cars gone and their lives too. Yeah, it's one thing. When I was young, I was a little crazier and liked to drive fast, but the traffic wasn't as bad then as it is now either. Generally, there wasn't anywhere close to where we were if we were driving faster than we should be. But some of them, they just come in and darting in and out of traffic. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and they sent me down there a lot of times in years past and for testing and that. And I got to tell you, the average speed on that highway is 80, and you normally only meet about one highway patrolman, once in a while two, but very rarely. You did that up in Kansas, you'd be behind bars, and they'd handcuff you and take you to jail. But the darndest place I ever saw for that was when we went to Clearwater, Florida, to the daughter's wedding. And when we crossed over into Florida, Jerry, there was a speed trap every 10 miles, I swear. If there was a town no bigger than one stoplight, there was a speed trap there. Because I have a very good radar detector. And the mainly reason I have it is it reads out the frequencies and the bands and different things. And I ran electronic countermeasures in the service, and I just enjoyed it. But there's very little up here. But you go to Florida, you better slow down because they were nailing them.
Started detecting years ago when the speed limit was 55, and of course when they moved it back up again, I didn't get one after that. They changed bands and that sort of thing. And I know I've got a friend of mine who's got one of the Valentines, and he loves his, but he travels in Florida and Mississippi in Texas, you know, Texas, they don't pay too much attention to you in Texas, evidently, at least a few times I've driven there. But in Florida, though, it has been that way for years. And Columbus, Georgia was a place like that, too, where they just, Columbus and Opelika, Alabama, where they had all that stuff going, Phoenix City, Alabama, where they had all the gambling going on years ago. They were terrible about having speed traps. They'd go from 55 down to 25 and 100 feet. They were basically just a way to get money. But at one time, at least I always thought, well, if you got caught doing 20 over the speed limit, I mean, they took your license and you went to jail then. You didn't get back in the car, but I don't think they do that anymore.
Sir. Well, yeah, I don't think they do either, Jerry. But more Kansas, I tell you, they're out there. And you can be out in the middle of the prairie and they'll still nail you. And they used to use airplanes out there around Fredonia, Kansas, as I was driving back and forth, going back to Learjet and then out to Wichita. And they'd have a line of cars there stopped, you know, with 10 or 15 cars, and they were giving out tickets to each one of them. And they had a Cessna flying up there, and there was white spots on the road shaped like an airplane. And you didn't even notice them hardly. And he'd start a stopwatch and stop the stopwatch when you went across the other one. And, buddy, they'd nail you. And they didn't have a point system back then. But right now, the only radar detector worth taking home is the Escort. And they're the finest. And then Valentine would be the second. And I never did own a Valentine, but I've had two or three Escorts, and they're really pricey. But you can't even compare the technology to what the old Fuzzbusters were back in the old days. It's altogether different now, and they got a plethora of different radars and laser. And Escort's the only one that I would rely on, and I still have fun with it, but it's very rarely that you run into them. Now, the really wicked ones are, and I've seen Highway Patrolman no more than two or three weeks ago, out those motorcycle cops, they got radar on the nose and on the tail of those things, so they can sit there and pick you up as you're coming towards them or going away. And all the cars have forward and reverse-looking radar, so you don't have to be in front of them anymore. And they run at about 34 gigahertz. They're way up there in frequency compared to the old X-band at 10.525. K-band was 24 gigahertz, but then they went to this 34. It's not very long range, but it's like a fire control radar on a jet aircraft. It's very, very accurate.
They got up that high. Like I said, I just hadn't paid any attention. I used to drive the speed limit anyway, but I didn't get traveling much. And in some of these areas, I'd definitely have one. And I was, I looked at an Escort years ago. They were expensive even back then, very expensive. And thought about it and just never got one. But I drove 15 years. And drove, you know, a lot of miles of sales, and knock on wood, I never got a ticket. Because I always left early enough where I just didn't have to get in a big hurry. I wasn't in a big hurry to get where I was going, wasn't in a big hurry to get home as long as I was on time. But, I remember the aircraft tracking there. I used to see this all the time down in Florida, too. That was very common. In parts of southern Georgia, it was like that, too, where they have a Cessna flying, and they'd have you lined up. But I think they had a system in Georgia at one time. It wasn't for the plane, though, but it was for, I don't think it was for the plane, but they called it a Vascar, which is, they used to stop watching it like that. And I did get ticketed one time with that, but that was back in 1970 or so, I think, and the last speeding ticket I got, I think it was about 1986 or so. And I was doing 60 and a 55, and they charged me anyway. but it wasn't that bad. I had points on my license for a while, but he got me for doing 5 over, and he said, I'm going to write a ticket. I said, I didn't argue with him. I said, okay.
No, there's no arguing with him, but Vastar wasn't that accurate. It was a stopwatch type thing. The really old one that I remember was when I was on a motorcycle and I was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde as a kid. And our neighbor was John Chester, and he was a famous cop up there. And he'd take out in the car and he'd go out and he'd set it up, and it was a hose that went across the road. And when you went across that pneumatic hose, it started this analog meter going up. And when you ran across the second one, it was a hose with air in it, and it stopped it at the speed that you were running. And I drug my feet across one time. And I thought, oh, he ain't going to get me. Because he'd go back out on his motorcycle and sit there because the equipment was too big to take out. And he'd take it out in the car and then go back on his Harley. And so Tobe and me, we thought, well, we'll just turn right here real quick, like, and go back into the 23rd Street bicycle dumps, which were big hills. And they were strip pit dumps. And we went back there, and we was just laughing. We stopped on the biggest hill in there at the back, and we just knew that Harley Davidson, there was no way he was going to come back there. And he knew he was speeding, but he didn't get an accurate reading. And about that time, we heard bloop, 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 and that old Hulk, 1200cc, I think it was, something like that, one of them electric lights. He come riding up that hill and stopped. How you doing, Mr. House? And George Leroy, how are you doing? And we talked, oh, fine, John, you know, and I could just feel the sweat beads running down my face. He talked to us for quite a little while and asked us if we'd been speeding or not, and of course we denied it, but he knew better, and he told us to give us a lecture. And then he went out, and he went over that camel's back jump out there in the front. Come find out, he was an old dirt track racer, Jerry.
A guy like that in my hometown that rode, they only had one motorcycle. Had about two police cars and one motorcycle cop, and his name was Harold Shaw. He was a good fella. He was pretty mild mannered, but he was in Harwell. This had been, and of course, this was at one time. You know, Harwell is just there used to be. There was a square there, and Harwell still is. And you went around the square. You couldn't go. It was one way, basically around the square. You couldn't go turn to the left. Right. I mean, it turns right and turns left and go around it counterclockwise. If you went the other way, you were going in the wrong direction. And Harold was coming around the corner. We used to have a drugstore. We used to hang out in there on the square. And something like he came in and made the wrong turn. Harold was coming the other direction. He had to get up on the hood of a car to keep her from running all over him. He was stopped there writing a ticket for somebody, and she was going on his side of the road in the wrong direction. I laughed till I cried. That it turned out that we said, who in the world was it? It turned out it was one of our classmates that had forgotten that it changed over to a one way. And her father, her grandfather had been the mayor at one time, and her father was a lawyer. I don't know if he wrote her up or not. We laughed for years about that.
I had three. I had one for turning left off of Broadway in Pittsburgh, Kansas for $8 at 10:30 at night, no traffic, but it was a new cop, and he wanted to make an impression. Jerry something or other was his name. And, yeah, like yours, Jerry. And, I went up and picked my sister up at the bus depot, and I didn't want to, but Dad made me. And I was going home, and I decided to cut off a block because the light was red at the next block. And Yeah, I got a ticket there, and then I got one in Wichita. And I was riding with the flow of traffic after I got off work. And this highway patrolman sneaked up behind me and tracked me. And I was doing 45, I think, in the 35. And that was for $11. And I asked him, why did you pick me? And he said, well, you sports cars and motorcycles been causing a lot of accidents lately. That was wrong. And then the next one I got, I was up at the farm cutting wood. And my nephew was off at university. And he said, Tom, I want you to start my Honda once a month, take it up the highway a few miles, run it up to about 80 and let off of it. And it was 55 mile an hour back then. And bring it back to farms so it wouldn't sit too long. So I went up the highway about, oh, I don't know, 2 or 3 miles on the big hills. And ironically for Kansas, but it was eastern Kansas. And as I was coming back, I went over the first hill. And I ran 55 all the way up to the Arcadia corner and turned around. It was Sunday afternoon, no traffic. About 1:30 in the afternoon. Well, a little before that, about 1 o'clock. And I went down that first hill, and I ran it up to 80, and I let off of the gas. And here comes a highway patrolman over the top of the hill. And so I just pulled over, and he liked that. He didn't have to chase me or anything. And I was in my coveralls and that, because I'd been cutting wood. And he come up, and he says, well, I appreciate you stopping, Tom, like, so quickly. And I said, yeah, well, I said, I know I was speeding. And he said, well, you was running 76 miles an hour. And I said, yeah, I said, that's exactly right. Don't you want to see the radar? And I said, no, I ran ECM. And I said, I know exactly what frequency you're on and what's your pulse repetition frequency and your pulse width and that. And I said, they're just good as a fire control radar. No argument for me. Well, he said, why'd you do it? And I explained to him what Mike had asked me to do. And he said, well, would you do it again? And I said, well, certainly. And he said, well, why is that? And I said, well, you were supposed to be in the Pizza Hut. And he started laughing, and he said, you know, Tom, he said, you're kind of up on things. How did you know that? And I said, well, you and two other officers eat in the Pizza Hut at 1 o'clock in the afternoon every Sunday. And I said, I didn't figure you'd be out here. And he started laughing. I said, I've been honest. And I said, could you give me a break? It's Christmas time. And I said, I can't really afford a ticket. And he said, no, new motorcycles and sports cars, well, we've been cracking down on them. And I said, well, I was as honest as I could be. I said, he told me, he says, I've never had anybody be so honest. But he still gave me the ticket for $46. And believe me, Jerry, I didn't have the $46, but I had to come up with it.
Hey, $46 was a lot of money that long ago. I remember I think I was working part-time when I was going out to school. I was making, back in the 60s, I was making about $19 or $20 a week. And that was more than most people were making. I was making about $1.90 an hour. Most everybody else was making $1.25 when the minimum wage came out. But $45, if they told me, if they give me a 45 ticket, I would have collapsed probably. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money now, too, but the way they got everything rigged now, you get a ticket for, the ticket is actually twice as much as what they write it for.
This is N0TR. Well, when we went to Wisconsin one year, we met, our son-in-law met us, and they wanted to go to the cabin up on the lake. Lake Wisconsin. And I said, Hal, I have my escort radar, because we was going to rent a car. And I said, I got my radar detector in my luggage. I said, I'll be glad to set it on the dash here for you. He said, no, don't need it, Tom. The last time I had a fuzz buster was a Whistler, and somebody broke the window in his car to steal it. and took it from him. He said, I just never used one since. And I said, well, this won't cost you anything, and we can take it out when we get there. Nope. So anyways, we was out in the country, not far from the lake, maybe 15, 20 miles from the lake. And I mean, there wasn't nothing out there but pastures. And he come up to this stop sign and stopped, and he took out. And I don't know if he's trying to show me that his, I don't know, it was a Chevrolet, like one of those Suburbans or something. But he stepped down on it pretty hard, and he went up to about 65 or 70. And it was 55 mile an hour. And I looked up a hedgerow there, you know, a line of trees. And as we went by, I said, hell, I said, I'm a little paranoid about these highway patrolmen, but I said, I think I seen a radome in the windshield of that car. Nah, not out here in the middle of nowhere. And about that time, the red lights come on. And it was the sheriff's department. And he was parked up off the road in that field. And that ticket was $175, if I remember rightly, Jerry.
Terrible. Yeah, I remember the last. I remember getting called around 1970, but that was, I think that ticket was about 17 or 18 bucks. But that was still a lot of money in those days. That was I'm lucky I had cash on me as I was headed back to college, because otherwise I don't know what I would have done. I didn't want to have to go back in that little town and go to court or anything like that. So I went and posted my bond, just 17 or 18 bucks, something like that, I think. But it was still a lot of money. It was weeks, wasn't a week's pay in those days, but it was a half a week's pay for me.
In Wichita, I was just making $1.70 an hour bucking rivets on a Model 24 Lear jet. And was only there a couple of months and got laid off. They laid off 300 of us. You know how the aircraft industry is. But yeah, the strangest one, and I, like I said, I only had three in my life, but the strangest one I ever got, when I got back out of the service, I get this thing in the mail, and it was for a ticket in a town in California. Didn't the guy have the same name as I did, Bernice? I think it was. And they sent it to me in Pittsburgh, Kansas, wanting me to appear in court out there to pay this traffic ticket. Buddy, it really rattled me. And I wrote them a letter, and I told them I've never been in that town before in my life. And I hadn't. So I guess they dismissed it, because I never heard anything back from them ever again, and that would have been, back in the early 70s.
Warrant out for you anyway, that's good. So one of the guys, one of our technicians who worked for us, back in, this has been probably around 2002, 2003, he was traveling through Charlotte, and evidently, he didn't pay attention to these red lights. You know, they have those, at that time, I don't know what they're still doing. I had one of those traffic cameras. It's a red lights, traffic lights, I should say. And they got him and sent him the ticket for $250, and it had his photograph on that too. You can see it was him, and it got the tag too. And oh man, I tell you what, I said that was a company. He was driving a company truck, and oh man, the owner about had a fit about it, about raising the insurance rate, because our insurance rate is already high. When you drive that many miles a year, you pay some extravagant rates, and you know, expenses, especially since it's like a commercial rate. But they got him. I said, man, if you'd smile, that would have been a good picture to frame.
Yeah, I loaned one to a guy once, and he was servicing, I think it was Burger King, the refrigeration stuff in the Burger Kings all around that end of the country. And he wanted to try one out, and I loaned him one out of my truck. And he was in Webb City, and it went off, and he grabbed it and towed it behind the seat. But he made the mistake of touching his brake lights, and the cop knew he had a radar detector. You cannot have one in a commercial vehicle, and it cost him. Well, no, it didn't either. Turns out that guy was in the same outfit in the Army in Okinawa as he was. And so he gave him a warning ticket. he saw some sticker on his window, and so he knew he was in that same outfit. But he didn't know him personally. But he got lucky there. But he didn't run one anymore. Jerry, Bernice wanted to run the mixer and that, so I got to get off here because I couldn't hear you if I had to when she starts that big thing up. And I don't want to impede her making this cherry cheesecake or whatever she's making. What are you making over there, Mom? Yeah. I better get off of here. Good talking to you, Jerry, and reminiscing. This is the 0GR73, Jerry.
Okay, we'll see, Tom. I wouldn't hesitate about the cheesecake either. That sounds great. You guys have a good afternoon. Good talking to you again, and we'll talk to you later. N0TR and 4DJC cleared.